Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Gabby Dalkin of What's Gabby Cooking.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's good.
Yeah.
Pumped to be here.
It's a fun little place.
Yeah, I'm kind of obsessed with it.
Yeah, it's all yours. Check out, you know, us on Instagram and all this stuff. Gabby is going to be
showing
everybody pictures today.
I just Instagrammed a pic of where we are, too.
Yeah.
Later, there will be pizza.
Later. I like that as a new show later there, like it's a threatening show. Later there will be pizza.
Let's do that.
There is a pizza in your book, and we'll get to that eventually. But you're here today for many reasons. I started reading your website a few years back, and you know, it's that combination of doing something that you love and being passionate about it, not just doing it for some kind of end goal, but trying to figure out what it is during the process.
Yeah,
that is so charming.
Yeah,
and so right, you know.
It's weird how you just kind of fall into things and make them work.
Yeah,
I never expected to be where I am today, but I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about where you were.
Yeah,
grew up in Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah, so I grew up in Arizona with like all the guacamole in the world. I was a hop, skip, and a jump over to Mexico. My girlfriends and I used to drive over on the weekends all the time. We would pretend we were in college. We were like 15 years old. Totally weird. But yeah, I grew up in Arizona, ate a lot of Southwestern inspired Tex-Mex food. I grew up playing tennis, so we did a lot of traveling around the Southwestern states. And you know, just eating my way through things. And luckily I played tennis, so I didn't get super fat until later in life. And then when I went to college, just kidding. I'm not really fat.
No, not at all. No one can see you on radio. You can tell them whatever you want.
Well, I'm also not really skinny. I eat like 12,000 avocados a year.
But it's good fat.
It's great fat. And it's so good for your hair. It's good for your skin, your eyesight. It has so many amazing, you know, things about
it. Yeah, I accidentally lathered in it this morning having an avocado toast. But
best breakfast ever.
Yeah, it is fantastic.
Did you put anything on it or just avocados?
I didn't even look at the recipe, and I just happened to lemon, salt, and a little
pepper.
Bit of chili flake.
Do you know what I'm most recently obsessed with?
Tell me.
This is a little bit fatty of me. Burrata cheese on top of avocado toast with some chopped up cherry tomatoes.
Yes, just keep on stacking up.
Yeah, it's maybe like some bacon.
Cherry. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we are here because of this beautiful book we have in front of us, Absolutely Avocados.
Yay.
Can you believe it? Your first cookbook
it's
out.
It's like my baby.
Yes, it is. It takes that long to actually come out.
Like longer. Yeah. I was pregnant for like three children.
Well, we're going back to your childhood. That is like one of the worst segues I've ever had on air, but Tex-Mex food, mm-hmm. Southwestern cuisine, you know, has these influence, obviously, of Mexican.
Right.
But what's your background? What does your family cook? And
so my mom is German. My dad comes from all over. I like to call him a mutt. We don't really know where he comes from. But we grew up in a very German cooking household. My Omi would make us all these amazing schnitzels and, you know, German potatoes, everything. So I really didn't cook Southwestern or Tex-Mex cuisine until I got to college and I was kind of on my own. And it just kind of came to me. Like I went to culinary school. Like I'm classically trained in French cuisine, but that's so not my style. Like I like to keep things easy and simple, but tasty at the same time. And I think the Tex-Mex style Southwestern influence with a little California cuisine kind of lends itself to the way I like to cook and eat, which is mostly healthy and sometimes super indulgent.
Yeah.
So
I live by those same means, even though I'm on the East Coast. But can you tell me a little bit more about what California cuisine is? I think it's changed so many times throughout, you know, the decades since it was defined.
Sure. So I think about California cuisine, well, one, eating seasonally. I mean, I do a lot of shopping at my farmers markets, and I usually just buy whatever kind of produce is there and then figure out what I'm cooking once I get home. And also, I think California cuisine is pretty light. You know, you have a lot of flavor without making anything crazy. So if you have these gorgeous tomatoes from the farmers market like they have right now in summer, you don't have to do a lot to them. You don't have to roast them. You can just slice them, put a little salt and pepper on them, and keep it easy and simple, and you get the great flavor that some amazing California farmer put in. You know, he put a lot of work into that.
Well, let's walk through your farmer's market right now.
Okay. Because
you were telling me already about all the amazing avocados, but what surrounds you at the moment? What are your inspired ingredients?
So right now I'm obsessed with peaches and nectarines. Like, I eat my weight in peaches and nectarines on a weekly basis. My farmer's market's on a Wednesday, and literally my husband knows that when he comes home on a Wednesday, there's not dinner, it's just fruit. Like, yeah. Go to town. Also, cherries. I ate a lot of Rainier cherries. Tomatoes are really phenomenal right now. They have all these beautiful lemons at my market. The greens are gorgeous, you know, stuff like that. Stone fruits, though, totally my jam at the moment.
Yeah, no, I'm waiting for them to creep up from the south right now, those Georgia peaches.
I know. Oh, my God, they're so good. I just made this peach streusel ice cream, and it was like sautéed peaches with the streusel and vanilla ice cream. It's going on my blog in a few weeks. I died. It was so good. Yeah.
Well, you know, these ideas that happen in your head about, you know, new dishes, new flavors. Where do they come from? Is there inspiration of travel? Is you know, do you read other cookbooks?
So my ideas come from two different places. One, I get a lot of ideas when I'm working out, and I'm like, God, I hate working out. I really just want to be eating right now. So some of them come from that. And then I do a lot of traveling for my job. As a food blogger, you know, I get to go a lot of fun places for, you know, lifestyle type posts and to learn about different brands and, you know, Washington cherries and stuff like that. So I try a lot of food where I go, and then I kind of get to go home and make it my own and bring it into my kitchen and share it with my readers how I would make it, you know, my interpretation.
Again, what I said about your blog earlier, you know, taking something that you love doing and turning it into a profession.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you ask for anything more?
No. I mean, I'm so lucky to be able to call What's Gobby Cooking my career. It's really, I mean, it hasn't always been my career.
Yeah.
It took 4 years to get my blog to where it is today. And I was able to leave the personal chef world and, you know, just focus on my brand. But, I mean, I'm so happy about it.
Well, I mean, let's talk about personal chefing, too.
Okay.
Because you're not just cooking for yourself. You're cooking for a client, somebody else. And you've had some pretty cool and illustrious people. Jessica Simpson, of note. How did you get into that field, and how was it working with these specific people?
So I've been super fortunate. Everyone that I've worked with is kind of amazing. I'm in love with all of them. Personal chefing is so funny because you really are going into someone's family. Like, you're being a part of their family. You're in the kitchen with them, which is where most families hang out. You know, you're making them lunch, dinner, whatever. So it's funny how I got into it. I started culinary school, and my mom was like, if you're going to go to culinary school, you're going to need a job. So I got a part-time job, and I interviewed for this family to be a nanny. And I was like, but FYI, I can't work, you know, on these dates or times because I'm in class. And they're like, oh, you're a culinary student? Do you want to be our personal chef instead? We just lost ours. And I was like, can I charge more? And they're like, yeah, a little. And I was like, done. Sign me up. Where do I sign? And it just was from there. And then I got other clients by word of mouth, and I kind of stayed with everyone for like a year and a half, 2 years, and then moved on. And I just left last August.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Really? So
recently.
Wow, less than a year of a full-time What's Gobby Cooking.
Yeah.
But you've had that blog for what, 4 years now?
4 years, yeah.
Why did you want to start that? Why was it personal? Was it
projecting? Such a good question. I don't know. Everyone asks me that, and I try and remember why I started it and why I picked whatsgobbycooking.com. Like, I could have picked something cute. Like, I don't know. I think I started it right before I went to culinary school, and I really hated my job that I had out of college, and I just needed some sort of creative outlet that gave me some pleasure. You know, working, my job was not fun, and I hated my boss.
Wait, what was that? Was that a personal chefing, or was that
something else? No, I was working kind of in the fashion marketing industry in LA. didn't like it. I didn't really hate my boss, but I just didn't like my job. And, you know, I just wanted something fun and creative. And my food photography pictures were so ugly. Oh, my God. They were so embarrassing. It's so funny to go back and look at them.
Oh, I'm going to scroll through now.
You should. Yeah. Chicken pesto pizza. Oh, it's shameful.
Yeah. It's funny. People always try to do this very complex dish for their first, like, food photo. I'm going to do this. I'm going to cook this. But you have to have not only the skill, but the timing, the lighting. And then take a picture of a tomato. Take a picture of one piece of produce that's in, you know, complete perfection, and you get a much better image that way.
Chicken pesto pizza not only sat out of the oven for like 15 minutes so the cheese like congealed, also it was on one of those really like ugly countertops that just has a lot going on, and I totally used overhead lighting and a flash. Oh, wow. It was really bad.
What would Matt say?
Oh, God. Matt
has
would
he
be...
lambasted you?
No, I don't know if Matt has seen it.
Okay, well, this is a call to Matt, and you could pronounce his last name for
Matt
me.
Armendariz
of MattBites.com. Yes. I've always loved his work, and you two collaborated on this book. And,
he did all the photography for it.
And you're good friends.
He's also my bestie. Yeah. He was in my wedding. He's an amazing person.
Yeah. But again, this career path where you end up getting to work with really cool people at the same time, like,
it's so cool.
Yeah. That's kind of a fantastic thing.
The food world's a good place to be.
It ain't too shabby. I'm enjoying it. Come visit me in the back of Roberta's any day.
Done.
Back to the blog. You know, 4 years of doing the same thing can sometimes feel rote or mundane. How do you keep that, you know, lively and you know, how do you re-energize yourself?
Sure. It's sometimes really hard. I find that travel is a big part of it. I need to go somewhere and experience new cuisine and meet the people that are making this food and see the passion that they bring to making some bread or, you know, throwing a pizza, whatever it is. I need to see that and get, like, re-jazzed about going back and making it at home.
Who are some of your recent visits?
There's this bread maker over in Manhattan, and I'm totally blanking on the restaurant name, but his name is Kamal, and he makes the most amazing bread in the history of bread, as far as I've had it. I mean, I'm happy to try more, so if you want me to try your bread, just tell me, I'll come. Yeah. But he made this white chocolate brioche that just blew my mind, it's so cool.
Yeah.
It's super cool to see people doing what they love. So, yeah.
So you need a little bit of bread for your avocado toast, of course.
Oh, yeah. You got to have bread. I'm a carb. I love carbs.
Yeah.
Love them.
But avocados.
Mm-hmm.
When did they come into your life? How did they become such a large part of your life?
It's so funny because when we moved to Arizona when I was 5, my mom took us all out for dinner. Like, everyone that helped us move, we went to this Mexican restaurant, and the server put guacamole on our table, and I literally was that kid, and I threw a fit. So embarrassing when I think about it. But my mom was just like, you can have a no thank you helping. And when we were little, a no thank you helping is when you have to try something, and if you don't like it, then you can say no thank you, but you at least have to try it.
Oh, so you weren't even willing to touch the stuff.
No. I was like, green slime, gross. Yeah. Like, see you later, I'll take the chips.
Yeah.
But I had a no thank you helping, and my mom just like looked over 5 minutes later, and I literally was just shoveling guacamole into my face as a 5-year-old. So it started then.
Yeah. And you have such excellent skin.
Yeah, it's the avocados glowing. So I started when I was young, and I just never stopped. And I would come home from school with my friends and make us quesadillas in the microwave and some guacamole on the side. And, you know, I always loved cooking for people, so guacamole is really easy.
Yeah. College, when you actually started cooking for yourself. Was it guacamole on top of everything? It seems like such a great foil for, I'm not sure about this part of the, you know, dish, but
guacamole
on top.
Yes. Yeah. What is that saying? Like, put a bird on it? Put guacamole on top. I'm going to start that.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Yeah, that could have been your blog.
That should have been my book.
Yeah.
Maybe number two. I mean, if you're sauteing some chicken and some onions for dinner, because this is what I did in college, chicken, onions, pepper, saute with a lot of cheese. Hence my freshman 15. And then I put some guacamole on top, and it was so good. And no one in college cooks, were at least when I was there. And everyone would come over and was so impressed with me. And I was just like, God, this is so much fun to have everyone, you know, so like, ooh, Gabby made us dinner. So I just kept doing it.
Can I just tell you your list of 50 things about yourself on your website? I love that you lead with that I'm absolutely obsessed with cheese, which you just said. And then you say, oh, I'm 26 years old.
Yeah, like just turned 27.
27.
Last week.
You're going to have to change that.
Yeah. Oh, good call. Yeah. Thank you.
But it's amazing that like you'd rather tell someone how obsessed you are with cheese than your age.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I feel like age doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I've met really cool 14-year-olds that are like far and away ahead of me in their careers. And I'm like, you should go for it. It doesn't matter if you're 14.
I want to parlay that into mentoring. You know, this is a question I wanted to ask later. You're surrounded, Matt, of course. I know you're friendly with Aida Mollenkamp.
Yes.
Been on this show before.
She has?
Yeah, wonderful, you know, like bright, energetic people. How important is it to surround yourself by that kind of community?
So important. Super, super important. I have this amazing group of people I've met through blogging, like Matt and Aida that you mentioned, a few other people. One of my good friends, Joy the Baker, she lives in LA. You should have her on. She's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, these people are all really lovely and they're so creative and positive. And it's just so nice to be able to sit down to dinner and not really talk shop, but talk inspiration. And you just play off each other. And then you leave dinner and you're just so, you're re-inspired, reinvigorated. And you just feel like pumped to be alive. So I think being a mentor, mentoring someone is, and being the mentee is really important to the career.
Blog her network.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, meeting people through that. I mean, the blogging world is so funny because people are so giving. People are just want to help you and like give you a hug and be your friend.
Yeah.
So as a blogger, you just have to learn how to reach out and just kind of like put yourself out there and people will lend you a hand.
It's funny. You know, I always think that the blogging industry or food blogging industry has taken cues from restaurants or but I think it's the other way around when it comes to sharing sometimes.
Yeah.
Because for so long I worked in restaurants that were very communal in a sense of, you know, sharing ideas, sharing notes, but there is like this lockdown as well. And I think blogging's actually opened up a whole bunch of you know, community support.
Right.
That wasn't there before.
I think it's because when you're a blogger, people are coming to your blog to read your voice. So I don't necessarily feel competitive with any of my blogging friends. You know, people are going to their blogs to hear their voice. So I'm totally okay to, share away. Like, let's talk whatever you want to talk about and let's all benefit from it. Because there's a lot of people out there that want to read your blogs and they're all going to, you know, they'll go where they want to go.
I like that. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about slutty brownies.
Oh, snap.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Michael Harlan Turkel here today with Gabby Dalkin.
What?
You know, we've talked about, we've speckled it a little bit with avocados.
Okay.
And we're going to get to that in a second, but we can't, you know, gloss over slutty brownies.
No, those are not to be glossed over ever.
No, and they've made an appearance on what? Jay Leno's Tonight Show. And
Jess was amazing to talk about them on Leno for me because I made them for her during her first pregnancy and we were all so obsessed with them. I mean, I've eaten more slutty brownies than are probably any doctor would ever recommend, but
because
whatever.
Doctors often recommend slutty brownies.
They should. Yeah. Apple a day, forget it. Yeah. Slutty brownie a day. Fully support that.
So tell me about these things, because you see the picture and your brain just shuts down for a second.
They're a little
mesmerized.
Slutty. They're slutty. Okay, so slutty brownies are these really amazing desserts. I mean, you could have them for breakfast too. Whatever floats your boat. But it's a layer of cookie dough, chocolate chip cookie dough, and then a layer of Oreos. And then a layer of brownie batter. And then you bake it all into the oven at the same time for like 35, 40 minutes, depending on how big of a pan you used. And then you have to chill it, otherwise it'll fall apart. But once it's chilled, you can cut it and you have this glorious brownie that's layered with three amazing things. I mean, if you're not into Oreos, you could probably use like another chocolate wafer cookie.
No, if you're not into Oreos, you just,
we can't
you shouldn't
be friends.
Be. Yeah. I mean...
just kidding. We can be friends. Yeah, it's pretty decadent. And there's, I mean, there's not much better in life than a slutty brownie.
No, no. Except for avocados.
Avocado slutty brownies. No, I'm kidding. I've never done that.
But there are avocado brownies in the book.
Yes. That's one of the coolest things about avocados is you can use them in replacing butter. And it's a great fat. So you're not only cutting out like a 2 tablespoons of butter has like 200 calories or something, and 2 tablespoons of avocado is 50 calories. So you're cutting your calorie intake like more than in half.
Yeah.
And you can't taste the difference.
It's a mayo substitute as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a monounsaturated fat.
Right. No trans fats, none of the bad stuff in it. It's just so, it's great. Like you can have a cookie and it can be good for you.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about these glorious, and they're fruit, right? They're berries.
Avocados, yeah. Yes. Avocados are a fruit. They have a pit in them. Be careful when you slice them open. You don't want to, you know, slice your hand open. That's dangerous. I have a new video coming out on my site that will teach you.
Yeah. I need one of those for mangoes.
Oh.
Those are the bane of my existence.
Yeah, mangoes are tough. Avocados aren't quite as hard as mangoes. But anyways, avocados, yes, they're a fruit. They're amazing. I think we said earlier they're filled with vitamins and minerals. They're good for all sorts of things. There's more potassium in an avocado than there is in a banana. Crazy, right? Which is why you can put avocado in your breakfast smoothie instead of a banana, and you're getting this amazing smoothie that will still taste just like a strawberry, berry, whatever smoothie you want, but it has crazy amounts of potassium in it and avocado.
Yeah.
So it's good for your hair.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Well, I mean, both by ingestion and exfoliation.
Yeah. Sometimes if you have like a overripe avocado and you don't want to cook with it, I like to mash it up and like slather it on my hair, and it's kind of like a hair mask. It's creepy looking, but it's really good for your hair.
So you got a hair mask, avocado hair mask, eating avocado, and it's just avocado all over the place sometimes on the walls,
yes,
and the ceilings.
When I was recipe testing this book, my husband would come home and I would be like covered in avocado, and everything on the counter was avocado, and I'd be like, try it all right now before it turns brown. It was a lot of avocado all the time.
I mean, before I was complimenting you about a single subject book. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they can go astray and be not redundant, but
they're tough.
Yeah. And how do you make something like this? You know, how does it have reach? How does it have breath?
Yeah. Well, avocados, I think avocados are amazing. Like, you really can use them in everything from breakfast, lunch, dinner, desserts, snacks, drinks, whatever. I was going to make an avocado margarita. Didn't get around to it. Next time. But, you know, I think a lot of the recipes in the book are inspired by my travels. And so I just kind of would be like, oh, I'm obsessed with tostones, you know, these fried plantains. How can I work avocado into that? Or I'm such a grilled cheese kid. Like, I will eat grilled cheese until the day I die. If I'm home with my parents, Papa Dalkin's making me grilled cheese. So I was like, we should put a grilled cheese with avocado in it. And it turned into this croque monsieur that's layered with avocado and prosciutto and cheese. It is absurd. It's so good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I flipped to the pupusas as well.
Oh, my God.
Which, what, are they Ecuadorian or El Salvadorian?
Yeah. There's this woman at my farmer's market in L.A., at the Brentwood Farmer's Market, and she makes the most phenomenal pupusas on the face of the earth. And I went to her and I said, I want to put pupusas in my book. Will you teach me how to make them? And she kind of did. She wouldn't give me all of her secrets, but I think I figured it out. And I'm like, pupusas are so awesome. And you just can serve them with an avocado crema instead of, you know, sour cream and stuff like that.
Sauces, vinaigrettes.
Mm-hmm. Salad dressings.
For carnitas. Because also one of the fifty things about you is how much you love pork.
Love me some pork.
That's fat on fat. But yes. How do they complement each other?
So carnitas are so awesome because it's slowly cooked pork. You cook it in, you know, fresh orange juice, lime juice. I throw a little salsa in there to get a bit of kick. And then when it's done cooking, I put it in the broiler and get it really crispy. So then you put guacamole on it and you're getting this smooth guacamole with this crisp pork. And it's like this total crazy explosion in your mouth and it's going to make you go bananas. It's so much fun.
And which avocado do you use for that?
Well, I all the recipes in the book are made with Haas avocados because those are the most widely available avocado. But you really can use them interchangeably. Kind of into the bacon avocado. And then it's pig with more guac with like a bacon avocado, which is like it doesn't taste like bacon, but you kind of just want to pretend that it does.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pig.
Yeah. I mean, how many varieties of avocados are accessible in the U.S. right now?
That's such a tough question. There are hundreds of kinds of avocados. Most of them are available in California, but they're all seasonal. So right now, I think we've got the Fuertes in season, the Nabals, which are these giant like cannonball looking avocado things. They're super fun to look at and throw at people. Just kidding. I don't recommend that. It's a waste of an avocado. You know, there are all sorts of ones. If you from kind of San Diego up until central California, there are tons of varieties that are usually available at local markets.
So let's dispel a couple old wives' tales, or maybe they aren't.
Let's do it.
Ripening avocados. Does a paper bag actually help?
So, yeah, but you got to put it in with a banana or an apple. And the natural gas that the apple and the banana give off ripens the avocado faster.
Yeah.
And I like to buy my avocados really hard because I don't want to get home and have an overripe avocado. I want it to ripen on my counter. So, yeah, putting it in a bag with a banana and apple, it'll go twice as fast.
How quickly? Like next day, day after?
It depends. It depends how hard it is. Like if you're getting a rock solid avocado that was just picked, you know, that morning, it'll probably still take a couple days. But if you just left it on the counter, it would take 6 or 7 days.
Well, avocados, do they ripen on the tree or off the tree?
Off the tree. Yeah, they don't ripen until you pick them. So if you're a really amazing avocado farmer, and I love avocado farmers, you can leave some on the tree until the winter and then pick them in the winter
really?
And have these amazing avocados when California avocado season really ends kind of in October.
Do you have an avocado tree?
One day.
Yeah. How long does it actually take to bear fruit?
I think it's like a 3-year process.
Yeah.
It's quite hard to make avocados fruit. Like it's the avocado farmers that I know are very smart people and they have to crazy things.
Yeah.
Crazy things.
Because you know, you throw away that seed and
yeah.
What can you do with it? Can you grow your own avocado tree?
You can, but you have to like cross pollinate it. I don't know the proper terminology, but you have to like breed it with the mother tree and you like graft a part of the mother tree on and then it grows. I should probably know this considering
that's
you
the
wrote
next
a book.
Yeah.
How to grow your own avocado tree. But you have to, there's something that has to go into it and then you can, and then it can bear fruit. But the seeds, if you do plant it, it will sprout a little something.
Yeah. It's kind of like that potato that you used to do in elementary school.
Exactly.
With the, yeah.
Yes. Totally like that.
The refrigerator, is it a friend or foe of the avocado?
It depends. If you put a ripe avocado in the fridge, it'll make it last for about a day or two longer than it would on the counter. But once your avocado is like ready to go, keeping it in the fridge isn't going to help very much. Like you just have to eat it. It's a tough job. Someone's got to do it.
So you cut it in half?
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way for it not to brown? Is it taking the seed out? Is it lemon?
Lemon juice. Leave the seed in. So if you're going to eat only half of an avocado, cut in half, eat the half that does not have the pit in it. And the half that does have the pit in it, pour some like fresh lemon juice or lime juice or a little olive oil on top of the exposed flesh of the avocado, wrap it in plastic wrap, and then stick it in the fridge.
What is an alligator pear?
Oh my God, it's an avocado.
Yeah.
Doesn't it kind of look like it?
Yeah, I love that. I'd never heard that term before.
And it's fun, right?
Find it fascinating.
Yeah, because avocado skin is alligator-y and it's rough and pebbly and it's the color of an alligator. It will not chase after you like a real alligator. I've seen that before.
Yeah, that'd be scary if avocado is like Night of the Leopards just came after
I
you
had a dream
day.
About that once.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It was in the middle
That's
of
how much avocados is in.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
There were like hundreds of avocados going through my kitchen at one point in time. It's no wonder I dreamt about them.
Why do I always think the word aguacate is watermelon?
It's not, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's just a personal thing that I have to figure out for
myself. No, I mean, I get that. I get it. But aguacate is an avocado.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But where does it come from?
What do you mean?
The actual origin of that word.
Oh, that's in my book, and that's a great question that I should know the answer to, but we'll have to flip to that page.
we can flip to that. I think I remember, but I don't know how to pronounce the Spanish word. Was similar to that, and that's where guacamole came from.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
But we're going to have people buy the book so they can figure it out
so
for themselves.
Turn to page 27 or something.
Oh, do you really know it?
No,
by...
I was totally kidding. I have no idea.
Oh, I thought it was like this Rain Man of avocado kind of thing happening.
That would be funny.
So after being the avocado lady,
what's
your next, single subject, or what's your next book or foray?
So I'd really like to do the What's Gobby Cooking cookbook. I'm really into entertaining, and I eat in a very interesting way. Like I said earlier, it's mostly healthy, sometimes decadent, and it kind of is in this arc. Like, you eat really healthy Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then it starts going kind of downhill. And then I want it to be like slutty Saturdays. So you have like slutty brownies and slutty mac and cheese and like really decadent things on Saturdays. And then you clean it up again on Monday.
Because, you know, a diet doesn't mean you have to deprive yourself of everything all the time.
Those never work.
So no, you need to have that little flourish.
Yeah, and it's like, if your flourish is a bowl of guacamole with some really delicious chips on a Saturday, that is not a bad thing to, you know, dive into.
So let's talk about some of the desserts too, because you know, we talked about avocado brownies really quickly, substituting some of the fat. You have a great avocado ice cream.
Yeah.
With coconut milk.
Avocado coconut ice cream.
Avocado chocolate chip cookies.
Those are my favorite. They're really good.
Are they sneaky ways of getting people to eat avocado, or do you think they actually make the recipe better?
Both. I think they do make the recipe better. I'm into chewy baked goods. I don't like a crisp cookie. I want it to be a little undercooked in the middle. And when you cook with avocado, the cookies are going to be chewy throughout, because that's what an avocado lends itself to. It's really funny, though. When I was developing the recipe for all the baked goods, I would have all of my guy friends from college over, and I wouldn't tell them their avocados and anything. And I would just see what their reaction was. And when I finally nailed the cookie, they, like, demolished them. And I was like, okay, it's good enough to go in the book now. If they don't know there's avocado in it and they ate 17 each, I think we're good to go.
You live in California, obviously, surrounded by avocados. Have you ever traveled down to Mexico and seen some of the trees and orchards down there?
I haven't, but I should.
Yeah, because I don't know. Like, in my head, I can kind of picture what it would look like, or maybe even what it would smell like.
Yeah.
But why is it only those spots? California, I mean, obviously the terrain, I'm assuming.
Chile, too. There are a ton of avocados in Chile. Yeah, it's just the climate. You know, it's the perfect. And I think in San Diego, it's, you know, they're, I think avocado tree groves are mostly on hills, and they allow for, like, you know, the water to flow off, and there's just great, you know, moisture in the air up in these, like, valleys and stuff.
Yeah, but it's cool because you see that influence of where avocados are grown in your food, and, you know, the avocado chimichurri on the steak. And you're also not scared to introduce avocados into cuisines that don't have avocados.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that goes back to traveling around, learning about new things, and incorporating that into your life rather than into a, you know, defined cuisine.
Right. And I just want everybody to eat more avocado. Like, we'd all be happier.
Yeah.
Everyone would be a happier camper.
So, any other avocado tips?
Oh, well, if you're in a pinch and you just want to eat something delicious, I like to cut my avocado in half, sprinkle it with salt and pepper and a little lemon or lime juice, and literally eat it with a spoon out of the skin, like a little bowl, an avocado bowl with avocado in it.
It's easy cleanup.
Right? Who doesn't love that? Yeah, it's a great way to do it, especially when you're on the run. And, you know, here in New York, you could do that on the subway.
Oh, believe me, I've seen people eat so much worse on the subway. I would be ecstatic. Someone, you know,
wouldn't
eating an avocado
cool?
cup. Yeah.
That would be really cool to see that.
You should flash mob it.
Oh my God. That might happen.
I'm sorry if someone's sitting on a train and people flash mob avocado cups. Not my fault.
That would be the most tame flash mob
ever.
There would have to be some sort of dance incorporated into it.
I'm sure we can figure
it out. I'm a huge flash mob fan.
Uh-oh.
Big time.
Well, I may have started something. No apologies, because I want to embrace the avocado as well.
Perfect.
50 things that, you know, you present to your public.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that's not on that list?
Oh my gosh, I don't even remember what's on that list right now.
It's mainly about how much you like cheese.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of a cheese whore. I love, like, I will eat a whole block of cheddar Colby Jack from Costco if need be.
Yeah.
What's not on the list?
Well, now that you've turned a year older, is there some kind of, you know, insight that you gained both through cooking, through the cookbook process, that you really feel like you can now share?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's all about putting yourself out there. Like, I never expected to be where I am today, but I had this crazy idea to write a book about avocados, and I didn't think anybody would take me seriously. And my publisher was, like, super pumped about it. And, you know, it wouldn't have happened unless I kind of just put my crazy idea out there and let it, you know, float in the wind until it got picked up.
Excellent. Well, if you don't like avocados, you can still go to whatsgobbycooking.com.
Yes, there are plenty of other recipes there, too.
But it's a fantastic site. This is a absurdly amazing freshman book, and I can't wait to see
the next.
And I have another avocado for dinner tonight.
Nice.
Sitting there waiting.
High five to you.
I might fill one in for lunch.
Oh, my God. I would have brought you California avocados. I should have thought about that.
We'll make a little trade. I will not send you any New York avocados.
No, but I'll come back and bring you a big boatload of bacon avocados.
It's a deal.
Done.
Bacon avocado BLTs in the house. Well, thank you again so much being on. Absolutely Avocados. Gobby Dalkin. What's GobbyCooking.com.
Talk to you guys soon.
Yeah. Fantastic.
This was awesome.
I'm just so full of avocado inspiration and excitement right now.
You can do Absolutely Avocados Volume 2.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Heritage Radio Network is a
nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today.
Thanks for listening.